And now, some really, really good news from Africa. Yeah, really good news from a small, unrecognised state in Africa. Africa, fabulous continent, many, many countries, and some unrecognised states. One is Somaliland. Somaliland broke away from Somalia in 1991. And you know what? Sometimes unrecognised states have really good stories to tell. Just sometimes in governance around the world, you get a really, really good story. Joining me now to discuss the good story in Somaliland is Michael Horton. He's a foreign policy analyst and frequent visitor to Somaliland. Michael Horton, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you very much for having me on your program.
This is a great story.
It is indeed. It's always good to be able to write about good news.
It is. I mean, such a young country, 27 or so years, self-declared state, not recognised by anyone really, so not much in the way of outside assistance. That might mean not a lot of corruption coming in as well, but nonetheless, they're doing pretty well in a couple of areas. What's the story?
Well, Somaliland has done well in many areas. It's a democratic state, and it's one of the best functioning democracies on the continent. And at the same time, they've managed to eradicate piracy, and they've thwarted Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab has no foothold in the country, and they've done all this with minimal funds while facing, you know, many other issues. Somaliland's mainly, it's an agrarian economy. They rely on largely livestock exports for most of their revenue. There is some oil that's beginning to come online now, but it's still minimal. So they've achieved all this with truly, you know, very little money as compared with the kind of billions of dollars that have flowed into Somalia over the past, say, two decades. For example, the overall cost of Somaliland's anti-piracy program in 2010 was a mere $500,000, and this was when the U.S. and its international partners were sinking hundreds of millions of dollars in their own anti-piracy efforts off the coast of Somalia.
Yeah, now what's the trick? Have they done that?
The key is, first, they have democracy that works, that has local buy-in, and many of their elections, they have over 70% turnout. So they have those ties with local communities. And their counterinsurgency programs, their anti-piracy programs are built in some ways the same way. They're built from the ground up. They rely first and foremost on the communities that are on the front lines of this fight. So they've tapped into that kind of local intelligence and got the buy-in from these communities.
Mm. So they've spent money on a few cell phones and, more importantly, actually recognise the importance of local communities. I don't see this as just, oh, well, they can do the job. It's when you give people a job, you recognise their importance, the value they can contribute, and that recognition can be important to them. So there's a symbiotic relationship where you both benefit. You may not know that prior to this type of work, prior to retiring, I was in Parliament and I did have a number of portfolios that touched on customs. And we do that in the northern areas of Australia. We have a customs watch program where local communities can sign up, be a part of it, get a customs watch hat or uniforms or whatever. And do you know, it's terrific, the sort of information that comes from local people on the ground. It's a very sensible thing to do.
That's a fantastic parallel, because that's essentially exactly what the Somalilanders have done and what they continue to do, because they rely on the eyes and the ears of those that are on the front lines, particularly in the case of the, you know, the war against Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab does not have a foothold in Somaliland, but this is because they're relying, just as you were citing in your example there in Australia, they've essentially signed up the locals, and these people have, of course, a stake in defending their communities. They don't want these people in their communities, so therefore they report to the government, to government officials, who then actually do respond. Either the police or the army respond. They respond to these threats, and you know, they take action. And therefore, these communities know that they can rely, at least on some level, on the government of Somaliland. And that's actually rarely the case in Somalia.
Mm. I'm talking with Michael Horton. He's a foreign policy analyst and frequent visitor to Somaliland. And are there lessons we can learn there? Yes, there are. So what that tells us is that with a little bit of money and actually relying on your citizens, and I think it's the latter that's more important, you can do a lot more than you can with, you know, hard weaponry and all the technical stuff you can buy. Really doesn't add up to much unless you have a governance system that is relied on and actually brings your citizens on board.
Absolutely, and that's what's happened in Somaliland and continues to happen despite the challenges they face. I mean, they're facing issues with climate change, the droughts in the Horn of Africa and in Somaliland in particular occur longer and they occur more frequently. And of course, as Somaliland is still predominantly an agricultural economy, this hits them hard. So they're grappling with that. They're grappling with many other issues. But at the same time, they've been able to achieve what Somalia hasn't been able to achieve, despite the billions of dollars that have flowed in there in terms of military hardware, aid, all of this. And yet, Al-Shabaab is once again resurgent.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned that in Somalia, Al-Shabaab has actually learnt one of the lessons that Somaliland is practicing, and that is some decent governance, unsatisfactory group as they may be. You mentioned that Somalians will often seek out a court that's run by Al-Shabaab because they'll get an answer. That matter will be dealt with. They can rely on the governance, and in that way they can build their support. That's a terrible indictment of Somalia, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, Somalia is, I mean, I don't want to be too hard. Somalia has made progress, and they continue to make some progress. However, as you pointed out, Al-Shabaab does run a parallel court system, and in many areas they provide services and a level of security, as brutal as it is, that is more predictable and more reliable than that of the Somali government. So therefore, I guess they have learned that they have to provide a high degree of predictability and some services if they want to count on at least some support from locals, which they, of course, recognize is absolutely essential. I mean, I'm in no way being an apologist for Al-Shabaab. It's a brutal terrorist group. Mm. But Al-Shabaab has been able to, time and time again, take on heavily armored columns, forces that have, you know, far more kind of weaponry than what they have. And the reason they're able to do this, to, at least to some degree, is because they do have excellent human intelligence networks, and they have some local support.
Well, I think the big take out of this is, to me, be careful about assuming that large amounts of money will do what you want. Why is it that people who deliver foreign aid don't always get it, that you need to engage people on the ground, that just giving money or weapons to defend yourself, you know, it's just window dressing, isn't it? You've got to get to the core of the place, and the core of the place is always the people.
Absolutely, and of course that is the most difficult. I mean, you know, speaking of the United States, is quote-unquote war on terror. You know, there have not been many places where we've had the kind of success that Somaliland has had, and of course we have focused largely on, you know, equipping well-funded armies, you know, rather than engaging at a very local, granular level, which is incredibly difficult to do because it requires a great deal of area knowledge, which many countries like the U.S. don't always have. It's a very difficult question.
Yeah, but even in, say, the United States and in Australia, there are large numbers of people who don't feel as though their government listens to them. I think this is an international problem where citizens are not given enough recognition. You know, all men are created equal, fine, unless you have a degree or you're a senior bureaucrat and then you can tell everybody what to do. I have a very, very strong view that the normal citizen is feeling cheated of being a citizen, really, and being engaged. And the more you can do that, the better.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, I look at voter turnout in the U.S., and it is often miserable. It's certainly not as it is in Somaliland, where it often is in excess of 70%. No, I think you're absolutely right. Citizens have to have a stake in their government, in their country. They have to feel that they're listened to, that they're a part of things, and that they're also given responsibilities, and that they need to live up to those responsibilities.
Well, I have to say, Michael Horton, it's been a pleasure talking to you, hearing such a good story from a little breakaway country that's so young and doing so well is, in the current environment, I have to say, great news. Michael Horton, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.